are live back again for another episode of the Mark and Made Easy with the Maxwell Group. I'm Kellen Hoskins, and this is Carissa Maxwell.
Hello.
And, you know, today we decided it would be good information for everyone to have to discuss some of the common pitfalls and mistakes that buyers make and how we can avoid those.
Well, and I think that the most important thing about that is that some people don't really think about all of the steps or the process of buying a house and what you need to do to get ready before you start your search, before you go and go look at houses. These are some things that you probably want to write down and think about before you make that step happen.
Yeah. So. You know, it won't be on the live stream. And again, thanks to Prescott E-News for hosting that for us. But it will be on your screen somewhere in this general as we go through the topics. So I think the first thing, you know, the most important thing, the one that no one really wants to talk about, but everyone needs to talk about is money.
Ooh, money. Right?
How are you going to pay for this thing?
Yeah, I mean, if you're paying cash, then some of this stuff doesn't really apply because you have a lot more flexibility with timelines and negotiation. Cash is king. But if you're thinking you need to get a loan in order to purchase a house, you may want to consider a few things.
Which well over half of homes purchased in the U.S. today are being purchased with a loan. So they're, you know, I mean, cash buyers are great, and we do work with quite a few of them here in the Prescott area, but I'd still say the vast majority of the homes that I sell are purchased with a loan versus cash.
Yeah. So you need to call your lender. And if you don't
Step
have a lender,
number one,
if you don't have a lender, we can always give you an awesome list of local lenders.
Yeah.
We recommend you go local. The reason that we recommend you do that is because they know our market. They know our niches. They know the neighborhoods. And they are going to employ local appraisers that know this area too. And they are going to be available for us. We can knock on their door. They're physically there.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about, you know, pressing 5 to be connected to somebody who you may have never even spoken to when you have a question about your loan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not to knock the big guys out there, but the fact of the matter is that when you really need someone to answer the phone, there's nothing that can compare to a local lender.
Yeah, no, it's really nice to be able to get a hold of them, reach them. And if they mess up in this town, their name is mud.
Yeah.
They get all kinds of mud on their name if they do something that that doesn't work. So if somebody screws up in California, you know, it doesn't have the same effect.
Yeah. Tim at insert giant local or national lender here, you know, he doesn't have the same level of accountability.
Right. Right.
So, as a local lender, here or in your town, if you're not watching from the Prescott area, is going to have. So I think kind of keeping with the money topic, another thing, and this applies a lot to first-time home buyers especially, I think, is closing costs. You know, there's a lot of really amazing programs out there that'll help first-time buyers or just buyers in general get into their first home or their second home, or maybe they've been renting for a while and it's not their exact first home purchase, but, you know, with down payment assistance programs and, you know, what are sometimes advertised as no money down.
Mm-hmm. You still owe some money at the end.
There's still money to be laid out even during the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before you even reach the closing table, you know, the buyer is going to be responsible for upwards of $1,000, you know, just in inspections and appraisals.
And that's actually, you know, maybe on the low end compared to how big.
Relatively conservative.
Yeah, it's conservative, but I mean, it's important that you plan ahead if you're thinking you want to purchase a home in this coming year in 2019. You definitely need to think about the money you're going to invest on the front end.
Yeah, because there is some, you know, you got to have some skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and our average sales price here in the Prescott area is roughly, I think it's 270 It's real close. That's our median sale price right now. And on a, you know, on a standard loan, you know, a conventional loan, the closing costs on that are going to be about $3,500, roughly.
Right.
But that's not including your appraisal and your inspection costs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's something that you need to keep in mind, that for a zero money down loan, you're still going to need to have about $5,000 to play with.
Yeah, because I mean,
at our average sale price.
Yeah, the average in home inspection is $300, and if you have a well, that's extra. If there's a septic, the seller is actually responsible to pay for the septic. But you know, if you want to test the water potability, that's extra.
Yeah.
So there's a lot
termite inspections.
Oh, I know, termite inspection. And so there's a lot of stuff that, you know, you have to pay for on the front end that you may not be anticipating.
Yeah.
So that's important. I think the other thing, when you talk about lenders and you're thinking about, what you're actually going to spend versus what you think you can afford are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And before you start your search and start looking at property, you really do want to get a good handle on what you actually are going to qualify for.
Yeah.
And that conversation sometimes doesn't happen until after you go look, and you don't want to fall in love with a house and then go to the lender after and find out that you actually can't even afford to purchase that property, and kind of is a letdown. It kind of bums everybody out. So
kind of puts a hamper on the whole process for a lot of people.
Yeah. So it's good to start, really find out what you're going to be able to qualify for, and really get a good handle on what your down payment is going to be, if there is one, and what your closing costs are going to be, and getting kind of a net sheet from a title company. Ask your realtor to help you with that, so that you really know what your top price point is, and make sure that you're looking at houses that you can afford. Because I think sometimes that can be really frustrating if you do it after the fact.
Yeah, nothing really worse than falling in love with a house that you then find out is far more than you can qualify for and that you can actually afford.
Well, that, and I think that changes how you look at it too. And then you're not going to stretch yourself outside of what you can actually do. And sometimes if you fall in love with the house first, then you go into it, you know, compromising that.
Yeah. And then you end up making bad decisions.
Right. And then you put yourself in a payment that is really uncomfortable, or, you have to change your whole thinking on how you're adjusting the rest of your priorities. And it's good to start by knowing what you can afford. And if you do decide to step up in price, then at least you went the right way about it.
Yeah, you know what that compromise is going to actually cost.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So
true story.
Definitely.
So the next thing I think that catches people off guard is the timelines.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. You don't wake up, go find a house, go, okay, let's write an offer. Let's say the seller goes, oh yeah, that's a great offer. That's going to work for me. Let's accept that. And then you're under contract. And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, you move in. Is that how it works, Kellen?
On TV, it happens like the next day.
I know.
You're supposed
amazing.
To get the keys and everybody's happy, right?
Wow. Yeah. That would be amazing.
It turns out that that's not in fact the case.
Oh,
HGTV got it wrong all along.
Well, I mean, it can happen if you're using cash. So we should put that out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that it's impossible. It's still, I mean, even some of the best title agents that I've worked with are going to be hard-pressed to put a deal together in less than a week.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
You know, and that's about as fast as I've... 9 days is the quickest I've turned one around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. It was a cash deal. And that was all good. But the house had already been under contract once, and we decided to go ahead and use the same title officer, and just redo the buyer paperwork with them. And it's still, you know, everything all considered, by the time we got the home inspected, it was a 9-day turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty quick.
That's really quick. I mean, the average escrow is 45 days. 45 days from the time you get it under contract to the close date. Why is that, Kellen?
You know, around here, a lot of it has to do with appraisal turnaround times. We have some fantastic appraisers here in our area. But there's not that many of them. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes the appraisal turnaround time can really be a determining factor. And then of course, if you're getting a loan on the home, underwriting and approval turnaround time is what it is. Mm-hmm. There's not really a way to speed that process up. Mm-hmm. So if you're getting a loan on a home, a closing time of under 30 days is just not realistic.
No, I 30 days is fast. So that should kind of set your expectation that, wow, if I can get it done in 30 days, that would be great. 45 days is average. Mm-hmm. And there's some people that don't want to be rushed. They actually want more time in escrow. That's usually we see inspection periods about 10 to 15 days from the time you get under contract. And then once you negotiate any repairs, and you settle that, then you've got another 10 to 15 days for the appraisal. And then of course it all goes in underwriting and then you get closing docs. And as long as everybody's on the same page, that dance goes well, then, we can usually get it done in about 45 days. So that's something you guys should really consider when you're planning to buy a house is from the time I go start to look, if I go look, for the next month or so looking for a house.
Yeah.
That's, let's say that takes you a month to really find the one. Mm-hmm. The one house, as long as you're working with a good realtor that can really give you the time you need.
Find the house. Yeah.
Exactly. And you've got the time to go look and really make a good decision about that. And so let's say that takes a month. And then once you get under contract, you've got another 45, even 60 days sometimes. Then, you're looking at a 90 day, time frame.
Yeah. From the can be about that from the time you call us. To the time you get your keys, 90 days isn't bad. That's a really reasonable time frame to set your expectations, mm-hmm. get your loan approved, find the house, just do all the things that need to be done before you move into your new home.
Mm-hmm.
So from the day you call us, factor in about 90 days. Now we can move quicker if the inventory cooperates. Sometimes it takes a little bit because the house that's just right for you just isn't on the market quite yet. And sometimes we have to go knock on doors to see who might be interested in selling their homes to find you just the right house in just the right neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And we'll do what it takes on our part. But then, once the lending side kicks in, we don't have a ton of control over that. We can apply a little bit of pressure, but really we want those people to be able to do their jobs thoroughly and correctly so that everyone walks away with the job being done right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it's important that you guys take some time, make sure you get all the rest of the steps done so that you can move as quickly as you can when you're ready. And when we're looking at somebody who's thinking about buying a house, we always ask them, do you need to sell a house to buy a house? Because that'll affect your timeline.
Yeah, we work with contingencies on a regular basis here because mm-hmm. we do have a lot of people moving from other parts of the country and moving even sometimes just from a different part of town. Mm-hmm. But, most people, even if they are paying cash, don't have the extra cash to just write a check. They end up, they've got to sell the house that they're in now before they can pay for the other one.
Well, and most people choose to do it that way. It's great when you can buy a house and then slowly sell the other house wherever you're coming from. That's a wonderful scenario.
Yeah. It doesn't happen very often.
And so we do need to consider what that timeline looks like because I never suggest that we go into a negotiation when we have a contingent sale that isn't under contract. And the reason I say that is because it really doesn't do anything for your negotiating position because you're asking the seller.
Yeah. When we're on the sell side, we're representing a seller.
Yeah.
There's no reason for me for the seller to even entertain your offer when your house I got one the house wasn't even on the market yet.
No, that's the point.
It was like,
right.
No.
Well,
come back to us, you know, when your home is at least on the market. Maybe we can talk if the offer is good enough. We can make some exceptions. But what I think a lot of buyers don't understand is that seller is taking their house off the market mm-hmm. to wait for you. Mm-hmm. So you've got to give them something that that makes that opportunity sound interesting to the seller.
Well, and I've gotten a few where people have submitted offers contingent upon their house, you know, getting a sign in the ground and getting an offer and getting past their, you know, there's a lot of contingencies there. And what I'm seeing though, is that the buyer or the seller on the other side, the buyer that's buying one of our listings, what's happening is they are being told by their realtor that the second that they put their house on the market in California, it's going to sell right away. And so they better find a house here first, get that locked up, and then that way it'll be a smoother transition. And what I'm telling you guys is that that isn't necessarily the case. Mm-mm. And it is, again, it's, there is no harm in putting your house on the market over in California, getting that at least under contract, mm-hmm. you know, even if we get a contract or a offer that has the contingency on the other side, but at least if it's under contract, it's a lot more,
way stronger.
Yeah. That is our suggestion to you guys. If you're thinking about purchasing a house here, is having at least that side secured. And I don't care what any realtor says in California or anywhere else, having the sign in the ground is most important. And secondly, you know, if you want to have a better negotiating position, it's a much better offer when you can submit it when it's only has one contingency, and that is that it's that it closes.
Yeah.
So
that's what I tell the buyers that I'm working with on a regular basis is there's kind of three kinds of contingent offers. There's the contingent upon the home being listed and then receiving an accepted contract and then closing. And frankly, that's a pretty weak contingency. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it just doesn't fly with a lot of sellers. Contingency number two is when the home is on the market and then under contract. That's better. Significantly better. Mm-hmm. And then there's the contingency that I look the most favorably on, which is the home is on the market, it's under contract, and it's past its inspection period.
That's key.
If we get that contingency, that's almost as good as no contingency.
Yeah.
Not quite.
Yeah.
But almost. It's real close to a non-contingent offer at that point, depending on where it is. But once it's past the inspection period, you know, usually, you know, barring some blunder on that buyer's side, then, you know, the deal's going to get done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of people that are hesitant to put their house on the market because they just don't know what to do. So they're kind of frozen. They're just, what do I do?
What we're seeing now is even in California, markets that were, you know, homes were selling in hours mm-hmm. are taking weeks now. You know,
it's different.
And mm-hmm. so the world has changed.
And in any market, things are going to change. So
constantly.
So that needs to be something that you're constantly keeping tabs on with what does that look like for my timeline? Having a really good why am I moving? And really getting all of these steps in place so that when you do start looking for the house, you're a lot more decisive. You've got a lot more confidence in making a decision instead of getting really overwhelmed by the process. Having these steps in place, and then also having a good partner in this, as you know, as a realtor, it's really important.
Yeah.
To be there to help you walk through this stuff, it's very important. So.
Yeah, you don't do this every day. We do.
Yeah, and
we're here to help.
Absolutely. So I get the question a lot. Well, how am I supposed to close on my house in California and move into this other house, and how does that work, and what if I have to have all my stuff out in this house and I'm homeless? How does that work? Kellen, can you speak on how we deal with that?
Well, I mean, ideally we coordinate simultaneous closings. Ideally. You know, and I would say about 8 out of 10 times, we can make that happen. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we can't.
Well, why do you think that happens? Why can't we do simultaneous closes sometimes?
You know, the times that it becomes an issue that I've run into are when that contingent sale isn't covering the entire cost of the new home. Mm-hmm. So there's also a loan involved. Mm-hmm. You know, with lending laws being what they are now, that 3-day closing disclosure waiting period can cause a little bit of a hiccup from time to time, because the money has to show up from the sale of home number one before it can be applied as a large down payment to home number two. And then there's a 3-day waiting period. Mm-hmm. So everything can go through properly. That's usually the issue that I find. Mm-hmm. If it's covering the entire cost of the home, then usually we can knock that out every time. But when there's a second loan involved, it can be a little tricky. So what we do is we negotiate either a pre or post possession or post pre or post closing possession agreement with one or more of the buyers and sellers involved mm-hmm. in this little dance, you know, because we're really working with three separate parties. We're working with our buyer, who is also a seller somewhere else in the country, their buyer, and then the seller here. Mm-hmm. And so finding that sweet spot that just says, okay, someone is going to let somebody essentially rent a house for a few days.
And we always suggest that there be a post possession.
Yes.
Because in that case, you're not moving into a house you don't own yet. Mm-hmm. The seller is staying in the house that they've owned, and just, you know, leasing back basically for a few days.
Yeah.
And that is a lot less liable. That's a lot less messy.
And really, it comes down to insurance for the most part, because, I mean, God forbid you do a pre-possession agreement and something happens to your house. Oh, Lord, who is responsible for that? You know, somebody falls asleep at the wheel and drives their truck through somebody's house. and we're in that hair thick little waiting period between you actually owning it or not. And you've already moved your stuff in. Mm-hmm. Well, the previous owner, their insurance is going to cover the structure. But if you have your stuff in there already, none of it's covered. Unless you go through a whole lot of stuff with your insurance agent to make sure that it's, you know, basically you take out a 3-day rental.
A renter's insurance.
Renter's insurance policy, which almost nobody thinks to do. It just gets a little bit more tricky, you know, and that's what it comes down to. Versus post-possession, you've already been living there. You're maintaining insurance because you have to. And then now we can close.
You know,
so everything stays the same for that little time period as far as liability goes.
Right. And so it seems so simple to ask for a pre-possession when...
Yeah, just let me move in a few days just early. Let What's me, the big deal? Even, You're not living there anymore.
Even 24 hours early. Even 24 hours. I just want to be able to move my things in so it's not sitting in a moving truck for 2 days.
Yeah.
That's usually what the scenario is. Yeah. Is they're moving their stuff from another location and they don't have a place for their stuff. And then what happens is they move it in and there's so much liability there and it's unnecessary.
Yeah, it creates a problem. And let's not forget that there's other options here. Rent the moving truck for an extra 2 days and stay in a hotel. It's pretty cheap. You know, that's an option for you as well. You know, that I think a lot of people overthink that concept too. They're like, oh, well, the moving truck has to be back by, you know, we only have 3 days with the moving truck. Well, U-Haul will give you an extra 2 days. You have to pay for it. But they'll work that out too. So there you have a lot of options is the point that I'm trying to make.
Well, and if you're thinking way ahead, it may be part of your negotiation. If you know that you've got to sell a house and that's going to be an issue. And so it's good to kind of think ahead and plan for these things and make sure it's a part of your negotiation if you know it's going to be an issue.
Absolutely.
The other thing I think when you're a seller and you're considering somebody asking you to do a prepossession is, do I want to put my new buyer in the house before they own it to give them an opportunity to have buyer's remorse? Do I want to open that?
Expensive buyer's remorse. It can be some very expensive buyer's remorse.
They move in and they start putting their stuff in and it doesn't.
The couch doesn't fit the living room. They're like,
or there's a creak they didn't hear, or there's a dog barking next door, or something that they didn't hear about. They just didn't really pay attention
they didn't realize, and then oh no,
they don't own the house
and the only liability they have is their earnest money at that point.
Yeah.
And so, the money they've spent on inspections and appraisals if it's a loan. It's not a common occurrence, but the fact of the matter is that sometimes people are weird.
People
they do weird things. Yeah. You know, this is a huge decision and it causes a lot of stress for a lot of people. And, you know, so it's certainly something that could happen.
Right.
You know, prepossession is something that I almost never recommend.
No. And so it's something that if you do ever get somebody,
I would rather put my clients up in a hotel. Like I would rather put money out of my own pocket to help put them in a hotel for a couple of days than arrange prepossession on their new house.
I agree.
There's just too many red herrings that can come up in that few days.
Right. Oh, yeah. And that's why, you know, if you ever get pushback when you're asking for the keys and it hasn't closed yet.
That's why.
Because there is this liability and there's a temptation to use the keys and start moving in early.
Yeah.
And you don't want to do that because if for some reason it doesn't record that day, all the steps lead up to the recordation. And if it gets submitted to the recording office and it's 4:52 and it doesn't record on that day, you technically don't own it until the following business day.
Yeah.
So if it's on a Friday and
you don't own it till Monday
and you have the keys to a house you don't own and it's tempting to want to go in there, the thing is
that your insurance doesn't kick in until you own the home. And there's just so many things.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's tempting, but I think the moral of this story is don't move into a home that you don't own yet.
Right. And
it's far easier to simply negotiate renting your current home back from the people you're selling it to for just a couple of days and do that right in the offer phase. So there's no surprises. Just, you know, hey, they give you an offer that's squeaky clean and perfect, a simple little counter offer that says everything's cool, but we need to rent the house back for 7 days at this much per day.
Or up to seven days.
Up
so
to
like
seven
if you
days.
Don't need it, then you don't need it.
Yeah.
But then that way it's very clear that you want a little bit of padding there for timeline.
For uh-ohs, because things happen.
Oh, things happen all the time. So, so it is important that you think about these things even before you start your search. Think about what do you want to happen with your timeline, with your loan? How much do you want to spend? How much can you spend? What does your contingencies look like? Do you have any? Are you planning to buy a house before you sell your house? And really getting a realtor as a partner involved because they already know and have been through so many scenarios, they can get ahead of any problem or any potential problem before it's a problem.
Yep.
So I would just recommend that that you call your realtor.
Yeah. I think that should cover most of it. I mean, there's always going to be little one-off scenarios. You know, and
don't get a credit card when you're in escrow.
Oh, yeah. Before we wrap this up, here's things that you don't do. if you're buying a home, especially if you're financing a home, once you talk to us, you don't get to buy things.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, buy groceries. We're not telling you to not buy groceries, but, you can shop all you want for the new furniture you're going to need for that house, and you can buy it just as soon as we hand you the keys.
Yeah, it's important.
No new cars, no new furniture, no big purchases. You know, it's one thing that I do every year is when Black Friday rolls around, when I have buyers that are in escrow over that Thanksgiving holiday weekend, I call each and every one of them and remind them how excited we are about their new home purchase and to sleep in on Black Friday.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you get suckered into applying for a new credit card to buy that new flat screen TV. And next thing you know, that flat screen TV just cost you your house.
Yeah. And I would also recommend that even if you may hate your boss and you may really just not like where you work,
don't quit.
It's, you know, really just figure out an alternative way to get out that aggression.
Yeah.
You know, call your realtor. They can work with you on some breathing exercises.
They'll buy you wine.
Yeah. We can really work through.
We'll take you out for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, there's a boxing gym here in town that I'm sure for a small fee would allow you to just come in there and beat up a heavy bag for a little bit.
Yeah.
I like to go shooting to blow off some steam. There's lots of different ways that you can avoid quitting your job while you're in escrow, and we highly recommend all of them.
Yes, it's important by the way, I just think buyers need to understand that if for some reason you lose your job for at no fault of your own,
You get laid off during escrow.
Yeah, then there is a contingency in the purchase contract that gets you out of purchasing the home, and you still get to retain your earnest money. So we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is you being one of the reasons why it doesn't close.
Yeah, be a model employee and, you know, don't storm off the job.
Yeah.
Because, you know, hey, sometimes work is frustrating.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't always love the places that they work.
Mm-hmm.
But remember that when you sign that purchase contract, it is just that, a contract.
Mm-hmm.
It's a legally binding document. And if you get mad and, you know, throw a drink in your boss's face and walk off the job, you're out your earnest money if you can't buy the house at that point.
Yeah. So just keep that in mind.
It can cost you money. Yeah, don't buy silly things that you don't really need, but while you're in escrow, don't quit your job.
Oh, and be forthcoming about your situation.
Be honest with your lender from the get-go. They're going to find it anyway.
Yeah.
That's what the underwriting department is for. You know, if there's a little financial skeleton in your closet, it's good to just let your lender know right out of the gate so that, you know, they can help you work through it.
Right. And they have a bunch of questions they're going to ask to help you with that, but let it all out on the table.
Yeah, be an open book.
Yeah. Cause it'll serve you well and it'll save you money.
Absolutely.
All right.
Cool. Well, that's going to be it for us today. Thank you so much for watching. And, if you have any questions, you can get a hold of me at 928-910-5954. Carissa, how can people get a hold of you?
You can reach me at 928-202-2654. We're here to help.
Absolutely. I'm Kellen Hoskins. This is Carissa Maxwell. And until next time, have a wonderful day.